to our benefit and to the credit of the process. And as is to be expected, Mr. Speaker, there were evanescent elements of acrimony, but with no lingering residue of malice. From my vantage point, Mr. Speaker, when compared to what obtains in the House of Commons in the United Kingdom, the parry and thrust of the debates met an acceptable level of decorum. And it was this that facilitated the atmosphere of congeniality and conviviality when we imbibed on occasions on the upper floor. On the whole, Mr. Speaker, the conduct of the nation's business in this honorable house has been an interesting and satisfying experience. And so it has been an honor and a privilege to be a servant of the people on that level. The time, Mr. Speaker, has come to effect my departure from this arena, and this I will be doing gracefully and gratefully, and by so doing, embracing the unfolding of my life as my destiny shall not be denied. And so, Mr. Speaker, with these few words of parting, we shall now engage this Honorable House in the business of the people. Mr. Speaker, we rise in support of the Appropriation Bill for the financial year 2006-2007. It is not an ad hoc, opportunistic document, consequentially or casually linked to recent happenings in our political state. It is an instrument of development that has as its genesis our contract of faith with the people of this country, articulated in May of 1997, and which vision of development was further elaborated upon in December 2001. And so this high development, at this point of development, we have arrived, as regionally and internationally attested to, must be attributed to the implementation of 8 appropriation bills passed in this Honorable House and which were predicated on the extraordinary vision of this government, its enlightening principles of development, and its visceral awareness of the needs of the people of this country. And so within the parameters of these appropriation bills, what was patently evidenced, Mr. Speaker, was astute governance, enlightened leadership, resolute implementation, and a social humanistic focus. And that is why, Mr. Speaker, that in spite of increasing oil prices, international terrorism, recent natural disasters, the dysfunctionalities of globalization, and the pressures put upon our banana industry by the WTO, the EU, and the South American banana regimes, this economy at this time has registered real GDP growth of 5.4%. The historicity of this event, Mr. Speaker, must not elude us, must not escape us. It is a first for this country and the highest in the OECS region. Mr. Speaker, to put this event in its correct perspective, what must be recalled, and the public memory, Mr. Speaker, can be very inconveniently short, is that by 2001, the economy had contracted by 4.1%. Our economy was in a minus situation. We were reeling from the blows of a battered world economy. The US economy was virtually in recession. The EU was floundering in an economic morass. And the world economic giants reminisced about the Great Depression of the 40s. And so after contracting by 4.1% in 2001, the Lucian economy has posted a cumulative growth of 13.6% between 2001 and 2005. Mr. Speaker, by whatever yardstick, this is an extraordinary achievement. An achievement in governance, an achievement in leadership. And it is on this pinnacle of achievement that the leadership and brilliance of Dr. Kenny D. Anthony, our Prime Minister, can be measured and tested. Mr. Speaker, labor, diebo. But our detractors, Mr. Speaker, will not. Their minds are made up, and so they must not be confused with the facts. What a pity, Mr. Speaker. What a pity. Mr. Speaker, when in our time, the IMF speaks glowingly about our economic performance, they, on the other side, make the asinine comment that we have cooked the books and that we have bribed the IMF and the World Bank and other international institutions. How ludicrous, Mr. Speaker. But we're in that time, and it is a time that will never return, Mr. Speaker. They embrace the words of the IMF, the WTO. It was to them gospel. Mr. Speaker, in this arena, sheer hypocrisy prevails. Mr. Speaker, with an economic growth of 5.4% for the year under review, it indicates in no uncertain terms that the economic platform for this country was brilliantly crafted and that the management of our financial and other resources was effectuated with astute professionalism and consummate skill. Taking all of this into consideration, the author of this bill, the Prime Minister of this country, who is regionally and internationally recognized as one of the leaders in Caribbean politics, is indeed deserving of our commendation. And he is standing tall among the Caribbean leaders. And this is a reassuring fact. And this country, under his leadership, is moving forward, is being ably led in its affairs, and it is being professionally managed. Mr. Speaker, the projected growth for 2006-2007 is approximately 6.6%. And this is further testimony to the fact that the management of this country and its resources is rational, scientific, planned, balanced, and comprehensive. And this comprehensiveness is evidenced in this year's budget as it continues to focus on the physical economic infrastructure as well as on areas of health, education, social protection, security, and justice. Mr. Speaker, as we see it, no one area, no one sector has been egregiously ignored. And the problems of the vulnerable groups in the society have in great measure been specifically and generally addressed. For example, Mr. Speaker, one, the elderly. A new geriatric home will be built by year's end. A home repair program for the elderly will continue with a boost of $500,000. The redistribution of the Lucelec excess rate of return will benefit 31,000 consumers in need of special protection, and most of them are the elderly. The pilot program of free medical treatment for persons suffering from diabetes and diabetes with hypertension will positively impact on the elderly. Two, Mr. Speaker, the youth, and more importantly, the unemployed, the marginalized, the uneducated, the disenfranchised youth. In this budget, Mr. Speaker, there are many programs and provisions that deal specifically with the plight of the youth. From skills training, general education, and small business generation, And now it is now left for the youth, Mr. Speaker, to get up and get. For the opportunities are there, the opportunities crafted by this budget and preceding budgets. Mr. Speaker, just as the Prime Minister stated in his budget, and I quote, that human resource development is at the heart of the success of economies that have reached recorded sustained economic growth, unquote. So the youth of this generation is the heart of the nation, which infuses the societal matrix with its essential dynamism, its potency, and creative potential. We are the present, Mr. Speaker. The youth constitute the future, and the future to be created will be predicated upon the enlightened and pragmatic programs and postures that we of the present implement and assume. We have at this time created an edifice of development, Mr. Speaker. Let the youth enter therein and explore the facilities of the NDC, the National Skills Development Center, the Youth Apprenticeship Program, the Rural Small Business Credit Facility, the Bell Fund, SEDU, the Human Resource Development Programs, etc., etc., etc. Three, the farmers, Mr. Speaker, as a concerned group have been targeted for assistance on a multiplicity of levels. And once again, we see millions of dollars being poured into the banana industry, and over the past 9 years has been the recipient of over $100 million from this government. Mr. Speaker, this is a budget for the people as a whole, and which has been brilliantly crafted in order to meet the exigencies of our national circumstance, and also to establish the platform of growth and development from which our youth can launch themselves into a future of achievements and success. The emphasis on youth, Mr. Speaker, their education or lack of it, and their situation of joblessness are matters of paramount concern and importance in these times. And so the programs we have alluded to will positively impact on the youth that have academic potential, and also those whose talent and propensity lie in other areas of human endeavor. To wean them away from those deleterious elements and influences in the society, our youth must be provided with pragmatic assistance and guidance. This budget, Mr. Speaker, of 2006-2007 says that in no uncertain terms. Mr. Speaker, as we know, the incidence of crime has reached alarming proportions. And the significant population in relation to this societal pathology is the youth. They need to be saved from the touches of those who are already steeped in the depravity of their times. And to those who stand on the threshold of a life of crime, the opportunity must be created to facilitate their deterrence, rehabilitation, and redemption. This budget, in great measure, does that. Mr. Speaker, the focus on internal security in this budget is more than timely. Though in previous budgets, this sector has not been neglected, this time around, certain critical areas have been considered. For example, Mr. Speaker, the establishment of a 3 million forensic laboratory by year's end, the acquisition of ultra-modern fingerprinting system, and the augmentation of police personnel by 7 qualified, experienced British officers. In the fight against crime, Mr. Speaker, much more needs to be done. Much more needs to be said. But we, at this time, are moving in the right direction. Mr. Speaker, this budget is unequivocal in its focus and comprehensive in its embrace of both immediate and futuristic elements that constitutes the vision of hope upon which our posture of governance is predicated. It is a budget of continuity that in a very abstruse manner evinces the functional dynamism that reflects the challenging political, social, and economic matrix of our times. Mr. Speaker, we are living in a change and changing world, and the instrumentalities of change, be it knowledge, technology, be it a critical convergence of the wisdom of the ages, or the express insanity of global sectarian interests, have dictated and are dictating a peculiar and particular Weltanschauung that is impacting in subtle and overt ways on the political, social, and economic relationships that we must internally and externally establish in order to survive as a people, as a nation, and as a region. However, whatever we do within our borders must be in sync in its myriad aspects with the universal ethos of development that presently characterizes this government's modus operandi. Mr. Speaker, at this time, this budget for the year 2006-2007 places this government before the judgment of the people. And there is no doubt, Mr. Speaker, that the individual and collective wisdom of the people, as will be evidenced on election day, will vindicate our exertions in governance as circumscribed by our contract of faith with this nation. Mr. Speaker, at this point in time, we shall focus some attention on various aspects of our ministry, starting with the Labor Department. Mr. Speaker, regardless how macabre or benign the circumstance may be, stability is a platform of progress. And just as motion is a sine qua non for development, so too is stability. And in relation to the incident of progress, it is an epiphenomenon of the process of growth and development. And it is the goal of growth and development in the societal realm that provides the raise of debt for industrial relations. And so in the industrial relation matters of our time and context, we see a patent stability that fuels the progressive thrust of this government's policies and programs. Mr. Speaker, we assumed the governance of this country in May of 1997. Industrial peace, calm, and tranquility have for the greater part cleared the corpus of public and private relations to the extent that a climate of industriousness has characterized the passage of those years. Unequivocally, Mr. Speaker, industrial peace has characterized our stewardship of this portfolio for the past 9 years. And in this regard, all of our social partners need to be commended for their patience, perseverance, perspicacity, and patriotism. What was evidenced, Mr. Speaker, was enlightened self-interest transmuted into postures of equity, legality, and justice. Thus, it is indeed heartening to note that the quality of man lends itself, on occasions, to a beatific and gratifying metamorphosis. And it is this transcendence of our mundane interests and concerns that enables the Labor Department to continue with its own development and to better serve the people of this country. In our review of this sector, Mr. Speaker, we shall focus some attention on these 9 areas of action. They are as follows: industrial relations, complaints, conciliation, trade union polls, the labor code, employment generation programs, work permit, and occupational health and safety. Mr. Speaker, the Department of Labor Relations commenced the financial year 2005-2006 with an exercise of reflection and introspection geared towards the development of a strategic plan. with the assistance of the Caribbean Center for Development Administration, CARICAD, it brought all staff members together to review the mandate, operation structures, and functioning of the various components of the department and to chart a new way forward. What emerged, Mr. Speaker, were new priorities in terms of 1, enforcement of laws and complaint settlements, 2, social partnerships, 3, human resource management and development, 4, employment, and 5, knowledge and information management. The Department of Labor Relations, through its interaction with employers and trade unions, and its strategic relationship with the ILO, has recognized that the trend in labor relations, human resource management, is to place greater emphasis on employee participation, harmonious employer-employee relations, and on practices which promote them. Although the department recognizes the need to reduce or to better manage the conflict between employers and employees, we believe, however, in the pluralistic view that labor problems also include issues such as low productivity, absenteeism, high labor turnover, lack of job security, poor working conditions, and so forth. Many of these issues, Mr. Speaker, are those that can be addressed and resolved by measures taken within the enterprise. And for that reason, the department has embarked on a deliberate policy of interacting with management of enterprises in order to address matters such as the implementation of proper human resource management policies, proper recruitment and selection, motivation, and employee development. However, the department has tried to ensure that the external environment is as facilitative and protective as possible in order to put into place certain basic standards relating to safety, health, freedom of association, paid holidays, hours of work, and so forth. The department has also continued to its work in the areas of settlement of complaints, shop inspections, educational programs, and so forth. Mr. Speaker, we continued follow-up visits for the year under review to the following economic sectors: wholesale and retail, services, hotels and restaurants, manufacturing, construction, transport and storage, electricity, gas and water, and water. Mr. Speaker, in 2005, 116 follow-ups were done in this regard. Now, with regard to the issue of complaints, during the period under review, there was a reduction in the number of complaints received. A significant percentage of complaints had to do with persons being made redundant. And that, for us, is indeed a very worrying development. Complaints, according to sectors, are as follows, Mr. Speaker. Agriculture, 68 received, 61 settled, 1 outstanding. Manufacture, 53 complaints received, 49 settled, 4 outstanding. Electricity, gas and water, 54 received, 48 settled, and 6 outstanding. Construction, 156 received, 151 settled, 5 outstanding. Wholesale and retail, 454 complaints received, 452 settled, 2 outstanding. Finance, 48 received, 46 settled, 2 outstanding. And other, 29 complaints received, 27 settled, and 2 outstanding. In the year, Mr. Speaker, 2002-2003, 80.43% of complaints were settled. In the year 2003-2004, 90.7% complaints were settled. And in the year 2004-2005, 97.91% complaints were settled. A respectable record, Mr. Speaker. Now, with regard to the sub-issue of conciliation, the department's conciliatory services continue to make interventions on behalf of trade unions and employers' organizations. The department has entrusted the position of chief conciliator to the assistant labor commissioner, who delegates the requisite authority as he deems necessary. During the period 2004-2005, the department was called upon to conciliate in over 30 disputes ranging from termination of employment to trade union recognition and decertification. The department has registered a success rate of about 84% as compared to a success rate of 85% in the previous year. Trade union polls, Mr. Speaker. The enactment of the registration status and recognition of trade union and employees' organizations, Act No. 42 of 1999, has clearly given workers the confidence to join trade unions without fear of victimization. During the period under review, Mr. Speaker, the department was called upon to conduct 9 polls for trade union recognition. Of the 9, 2 against the National Workers Union and the CCC, and the National Workers Union and the Nuclear Village Council are still outstanding. 6 polls ended in favor of trade unions. The Labour Code, Mr. Speaker, the much spoken about Labour Code, the much referred to, alluded to Labour Code. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, the Labour Code has not advanced much further as was reported in the period 2004-2005. However, the AG's Chamber has given us the assurance that the Labour Code is its number one priority for 2006, and that the Code will be enacted into law after having been presented before this Honourable House this financial year. Mr. Speaker, International Labour Organization. The Department of Labour Relations continues to receive assistance from the ILO. In the past, this has manifested itself in the preparation of the Labour Code, the training of labour officers in conciliation and mediation, report writing on ILO conventions, and promoting the concept of social dialogue and tripartite consultations. During the period under review, Mr. Speaker, the ILO gave guidance to this department as we sought to make productivity issues part of the working environment. And in this regard, a senior labour officer got much needed exposure in the establishment of a Caribbean Productivity Council sponsored by the ILO. This experience, Mr. Speaker, will serve us well as we are in the process of setting up our own national productivity council. Employment generation programs, Mr. Speaker. In its quest to generate employment for St. Lucian nationals, the Department of Labor has placed very high on its agenda the pursuit of overseas employment opportunities. And in this regard, we shall allude to the Canada Farm Workers Program, the J-1 Work and Travel Programs, the H-2B Hospitality Program, the Cruise Ship Employment Program, and the Caregiver Program. With regard to the Canada Farm Workers Program, St. Lucia recorded an increase of 27% over 2004. Last year, 119 workers participated in the program, whereas in this year period under review, our numbers increased to 160. Naturally, this increase in numbers resulted in a corresponding increase in earnings. The gross earning for the period under review was $3,561,103 EC. As we see, Mr. Speaker, there is still a need for more interaction between the Department of Labor Relations and the Canadian employers in order to increase the number of St. Lucians participating in this obviously very important program. But then, Mr. Speaker, there is a cost involved, and therein lies the rub, however unnecessary. Mr. Speaker, as regards the J-1 Work and Travel Program, 21 students of the Division of Hospitality Studies at Sir Arthur Lewis Community College traveled to Florida, where they were employed at Breakers Hotel for a period of 3 months. this program not only provided high standard work experience, but allowed the students to earn salaries throughout their sojourn in Florida. We are at this time trying to increase the number of hospitality plants to which we can send our students. Mr. Speaker, the H-2B program. Towards the end of last year, 31 St. Lucians traveled to Orlando, Florida, where they were employed with a Marriott hotel for an 8-month period. Again, we have the combination of experience gain and wages earned. It is to be noted that both the JI and H-2B programs will undoubtedly enhance the skills of our nationals and assist in the improvement of the quality of service that they can now offer within our own hospitality industry. Mr. Speaker, with regard to the cruise ship employment program, the department is presently sourcing new opportunities of employment for our nationals within the cruise ship industry. So far, we have not been able to establish contractual relationships with the cruise agents, but then there are interesting possibilities, and so our efforts in this regard continue. The caregiver program, Mr. Speaker. At this time, over 200 persons have registered for the Canada Caregivers Program, which we hope to commence very shortly. This program will provide the opportunity for St. Lucians to go to Canada and work for a period of approximately 2 years and subsequent thereto obtain landed immigrant status. Mr. Speaker, with regard to the issue of work permits, the projection for work permit revenue for the period 2005-2006 was estimated at $1,800,000. As of January 2006, the amount collected was $2,462,450. A total of 464 work permits were issued for the period under review. The breakdown in terms of economic sectors is as follows. Hotels and restaurants, 102. Finance, insurance and services, 111. Wholesale and retail, 58. Manufacturing, 44. Transportation, storage, 6. Construction, 58. Gas and water, 3. Communication, 67. Agriculture, forestry and fishes, 23, and other 30. Within the context of the work permits, Mr. Speaker, the department has engaged in discussions with the Ministry of Communications and Works, the Ministry of External Affairs, and the Immigration Department to prepare itself for the movement of CARICOM nationals under the CSME. It is already recognized, Mr. Speaker, as a number of CARICOM nationals who receive work permits are eligible for skills national certificates, and therefore the revenue for work permits very likely will decline in this new financial year. The department also recognizes, Mr. Speaker, that the monitoring mechanism for CARICOM skilled nationals have not been developed, and therefore posing a challenge to labor officers who are expected to monitor the movement of labor to the state. Also in this regard, Mr. Speaker, there is no linkage between the Ministry of External Affairs, which is the agency responsible for the issuance of skills national certificates. Our recommendation in this regard, Mr. Speaker, is to shift the authority for the issuance of such certificates to the Department of Labor so that there can be a program of monitoring and control for this system. Incidentally, Mr. Speaker, such an administrative arrangement exists in Jamaica and in Suriname. Of course, Mr. Speaker, the commensurate staffing and resources would have to be provided and allocated to this department in order to effectively and efficiently carry out this mandate. Mr. Speaker, occupational health and safety. The Ministry of Labor Relations, Public Service and Cooperatives saw the completion of the HIDA's project titled Increasing the Productivity of Workers Living with HIV/AIDS. It was a project conceived by the Labor Department and the AIDS Action Foundation and funded by the OES. One of the successes of this project was the formulation of the St. Lucia National HIV/AIDS Workplace Policy. Mr. Speaker, there has been an increase in occupational health and safety-related information inquiries during the year under review. In 2004-2005, there were 585 such inquiries. And in 2005-2006, there were 690, an increase of 18%. Requests were received from students, secondary schools and university, construction industries, architect associations, and individuals. And their concerns were mainly centered around indoor air quality, molds, air conditioning, and legislative provisions with regard to occupational health and safety. In spite of those requests, Mr. Speaker, which were responded to, the Occupational Health and Safety Unit is manned and has been manned for approximately 10 years by one lone officer, the indefatigable Mr. McGuire. With regard to the issue of accidents, injuries, many more workplaces are using the design form to report workplace accidents as is required by law. However, this is usually done by the more established companies. In the year 2005, 20 injuries slash accidents were reported. Of that number, 16 were non-fatal and 4 were fatal. The non-fatal injuries consisted of traumas of the hands, legs, eyes, as a result of falls, punctures, and cuts. Mr. Speaker, although there is an emerging change in mindset, there is still under-reporting of work-related injuries slash accidents. As we see it, the incidence of fatal accidents is too high. Industrial trucks incidents, that is forklifts, are on the increase. And so what we are suggesting at this time is that forklift operators should be certified. It is interesting to note, Mr. Speaker, that the Occupational Health and Safety Unit assisted the Windward Island Leeward Brewery in facilitating a training program for their forklift operators. Mr. Speaker, with regard to the collaborative inter-institutional linkages, this one-man unit is being represented on the Vision 2020 Committee, the Public Health Board, the Bureau of Standards, the Pesticide Control Board, including the Pesticide and Toxic Chemical Technical Committee, in a technical and professional capacity. An extraordinary workload. In conjunction with this and other representations and interventions, this unit undertook 40 workplace interventions, which in part consisted of 11 complaints concerning working conditions. Mr. Speaker, during the year under review, the unit initiated a program for schools dealing with health, safety, and environment security. We were aware of the increasing injuries and harmful incidents at schools and the inadequate legislative provisions to deal with those incidents in that environment. We further realized, Mr. Speaker, that the key to preventing harm to students, school employees, and the school environment, in the school environment, was to establish a good occupational safety and health environment safety program. And this we are in the process of doing. That program, when fully operationalized, would within its terms of reference engage management's commitment, student and employee involvement, identify and prioritize potential hazards in the school environment, provide adequate systems to eliminate such hazards, and to train students and employees and management. It must be noted, Mr. Speaker, that the Occupational Health and Safety Unit is not only a key prerequisite for achieving decent work, but is also a major and catalytic factor in the process of economic growth, development, and productivity. And since schools are the crucibles within which mindsets are created and molded, it is therefore imperative that the Occupational Health and Safety Environment Security Program, which characterizes the world of work, should be introduced in the leading institutions of this country. In conclusion, and in relation to the labor relations sector, we would like to state that for the financial year, the Labor Department will be giving, this financial year, the Labor Department will be giving priority to the following areas: the integration of the Occupational Health and Safety Unit and Labor Inspection Services, the enactment of the Labor Code, the completion of work in the Information Processing Unit to facilitate research, analysis and publication of timely labor market information, the ratification of all recommended International Labor Day Organization conventions, the promotion of production bargaining, and lastly, the establishment of a tripartite labor advisory board. This, Mr. Speaker, concludes our submission as far as the labor relations and the sector is concerned. So we shall now move on to the public service, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the year under review, this department works steadfastly in the accomplishment of various strategies outlined in the strategic plan, and in the process of so doing, engage the public sector reform unit in various initiatives. The Ministry of the Public Service, Mr. Speaker, improve its interface with human resource coordinators with a view to enhancing the knowledge base of the service. This was done through a series of training workshops on major human resource issues such as disciplinary procedure, structure, no pay leave policy, requirements for transfer, promotions, and so forth. It is expected that other relevant areas will be covered at a later date, and thereby providing improved skills and knowledge to human resource personnel for a better functioning public service and for an equitable upward mobility path. Mr. Speaker, the public service has been confronted with a number of disciplinary matters, the investigations of which have been protracted for the greater part, and with failures due to a lack of knowledge of investigation processes. During the year under review, Mr. Speaker, this ministry has sought to clarify the process by working closely with the Public Service Commission to ensure that disciplinary matters were professionally investigated. It is hoped, Mr. Speaker, that this collaboration will not only expedite the disciplinary process, but will reduce the number of cases that have to be withdrawn by the Commission, as well as those being appealed or challenged through the courts. At this time, Mr. Speaker, the health service is faced with many challenges in the delivery of quality health care. One such challenge, Mr. Speaker, is the decreasing number of experienced and competent nurses within the institutional primary health care services. This staff shortage, Mr. Speaker, has given rise to one, problems of scheduling nurses, and B, requiring staff to work over and above acceptable time limits. The Cabinet of Ministers, Mr. Speaker, through memos submitted to it by this public service, has temporarily sought to correct this situation by establishing seasonal employment for nurses at the Victoria Hospital, the Soufre Hospital, Denry Hospital, and the Golden Hope Hospital, as well as in the primary care services, the health centers. This form of employment in part-time is part-time and flexible to meet staffing requirements on a needs basis. It is a system whereby nursing professional can be accessed from a managed part-time nursing pool for a defined work period. During that time, Mr. Speaker, a nurse may work for extra pay in an effort to relieve the staff shortage. Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member has 15 minutes left to make his contribution.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the objectives of such employment strategy are as follows. One, to achieve adequate staffing in the support of the delivery of quality and safe patient care. Two, to provide cost-effective patient care. Three, to maximize the limited nursing resources available to the health service. And four, to meet public expectations and reduce patients' complaints. Incidentally, Mr. Speaker, Cabinet also extended this on-call system to nurses of the operating theatre. Mr. Speaker, with regard to capacity building within the public service, the government awarded study leave with pay to 53 public officers. The associated cost in terms of salaries was approximately $800,000. In addition, 38 officers were presently pursuing, or are presently pursuing, undergraduate and graduate programs at various tertiary institutions. Mr. Speaker, the Training Division also continued its skills enhancement program through competency-based job-related training. For the year under review, Mr. Speaker, various programs of customer service, language and communications were pursued. And very soon, Mr. Speaker, public officers will benefit from online training in negotiating skills. It is a program sponsored by the United Nations Development Training Board. Mr. Speaker, it is to be noted that the government of St. Lucia benefits every year from awards by various funding institutions, such as the Commonwealth Secretariat, CARICOM, and the OAS. Certain countries like Singapore, Malaysia, and India do provide short-term service-related training. And these programs have benefited agencies immensely in the enhancement of employee skills. And this financial year, Mr. Speaker, the Ministry will be pursuing various training programs aimed at enhancing capacity. Some of these are as follows. One, human rights management, job description, writing and job evaluation. Two, strategic planning. Three, customer service. Four, legal aspects of public service. Five, negotiation, conflict resolution strategies. Six, ethics in government. Seven, policy analysis. Eight, productivity enhancement and quality control. And 10, life skills. Mr. Speaker, this ministry is charged with the responsibility for pursuing the public service response for the World Bank Government St. Lucia Prevention and Control Project. This component of the project targets all public officers and is expected, one, to establish a structure for management and coordination of HIV/AIDS, two, train personnel in program implementation, three, develop an HIV/AIDS workplace policy for the public service, four, develop and implement an HIV/AIDS prevention workplace program, five, establish services for care and support to infected staff and families, and implement fair employment practices for infected staff, and six, continuously monitor and evaluate the progress of the project. The Ministry's project proposal is presently before the National AIDS Program Secretariat for approval, and after which we will be moving swiftly into the implementation phase. Mr. Speaker, with regard to the subject area of negotiations, it is to be noted that the government of St. Lucia has been able to successfully complete negotiations with 8 of the 9 public sector unions over the last financial year. The collective agreement for the triennium 2004-2007 contained a wage increase of 10% to public officers. This represents a total payout of approximately $12 million. The government also agreed to pay increments for the years 1998 and 1999 to deserving officers. While the calculation of increments posed a challenge, because of the period in question, the payments will be made very shortly. Mr. Speaker, it is expected that during this financial year, a counseling unit will be established within this ministry to offer support to public officers with personal and work-related problems. This unit, Mr. Speaker, will coordinate and facilitate programs aimed at improving motivation, productivity, and professionalism. Such training, Mr. Speaker, such training programs will entail inter alia life skills such as personal budgeting, confidence building, planning for retirement, and stress management. These interventions, Mr. Speaker, will be geared towards the reduction and elimination of pilferage, corruption, and low morale in the public service. The counseling unit, Mr. Speaker, is also expected to spearhead education programs on the HIV/AIDS and drug abuse workplace policies, as well as providing counseling and support for HIV/AIDS infected and drug addicted public officers. Mr. Speaker, another area of interest is the revision of the classification and pay plan. Mr. Speaker, the White Paper on Public Sector Reform 2000 proposed the revision of the reclassification of pay plan, which was developed 14 years ago. This long overdue initiative seeks to achieve the following. 1. Review present positions, grades, and salary scales. 2. Upgrade, downgrade, and change nomenclature of numerous posts. 3. Revise job descriptions. 4. Incorporate into benchmark qualifications the new qualifications such as advanced diplomas, professional certificates, and so forth. And lastly, regularize the inequity in the classification of posts. Mr. Speaker, upon...
The Honourable Member has 5 minutes left to make his contribution.
1 hour. Speaker, I beg to move a motion on the understanding order 3210 to permit the Honourable Minister of Labour Relations, Public Service and Cooperatives an additional 1 hour within which to complete his presentation to us.
Honourable Members, the question is that the Honourable Member for Labrie be allowed an additional 1 hour, understanding order 3010, to make his contribution. I now put the question, as many are of that opinion say aye. As many are of a contrary opinion say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Member for Labrie, leave is granted.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, my colleagues. It is to be noted that this is my swan song. Mr. Speaker, as we were saying, this long overdue initiative seeks to achieve the following. 1. Review present positions. Upon completion, Mr. Speaker, of this exercise, it is envisioned that the grants would be commensurate with qualifications and structures to all agencies, and that would be improved and thereby enhancing their efficiency. Mr. Speaker, as alluded to earlier, the Ministry expects to drive its in-service training program more vigorously this year. Such programs will be aimed towards bridging the gap between academic certification and the skills required for the job. Particular attention, Mr. Speaker, will be paid to strengthening the middle-class management stream in order to prepare officers to take on senior management positions. Acute and focused attention will be paid to succession planning and thereby ensuring constructive and enlightened continuity in the public service. Such an intensive training plan, Mr. Speaker, calls for increased physical space and facilities that would reflect the technological achievements of this era. Mr. Speaker, the Public Service Training Center of Excellence will include a computer lab, break rooms, and additional training rooms to accommodate 50 and officers. What we do hope to achieve, Mr. Speaker, is a public service that not only works, but works for the people. And in the process of so doing, provides quality service at an optimal level. That, Mr. Speaker, is essentially the mandate of the Ministry of the Public Service. Mr. Speaker, we shall now move on to the subsector of public sector reform. From the onset, Mr. Speaker, it is to be noted the public sector reform unit was transferred from the office of the Prime Minister to this ministry at the beginning of this financial, or the financial year 2005-2006. This change in locus was accompanied by certain administrative changes, which we hope would more forcefully drive the implementation of our reform agenda. Perhaps one can recall that the unit completed the white paper on public sector reform in the year 2000. And the strategic objectives emanating therefrom were as follows, Mr. Speaker. One, to maximize the use of scarce resources of the state through the coordination and integration of ongoing activities and sustaining a culture of planning in the public service. Two, to promote high quality, cost-effective, and people-oriented service that would not only raise the profile of the public service as a benign institution, but more importantly, be perceived as an institution that works for and provides unquestionable service to the people of this country. And three, to improve transparency, accountability, and governance in the various processes of the public service. And so in the year under review, Mr. Speaker, this reform unit engaged in a number of initiatives in its quest to fulfill its mandate. And some of these are as follows. One, code of conduct. The unit conducted the research and commenced the drafting of a code of conduct for the public service. This code contains the ethical standards by which public officers will be governed in their modus operandi and vivendi within the context of their professional existence. These standards are expected to reduce acts of corruption, disclosure of confidential information, unfairness, disrespect, nepotism, and other forms of professional misconduct throughout the service. This code will be supported, Mr. Speaker, by a Public Service Act and regulations that will replace the archaic and legally questionable standing orders. Two, regularization of non-established staff. During the period under review, Mr. Speaker, the unit was engaged in research on non-established staff with a view to regularizing their status. Historically, Mr. Speaker, the number of persons employed within the public service and paid from the wages vote was small, minimal. But at this point in time, Mr. Speaker, the numbers have increased astronomically and disconcertingly, and to a level that, if not attended to, would escalate to the point where control would be lost. Such a large vote, Mr. Speaker, at this time camouflages the real size of the public service and may keep government in a state of spurious comfort while fiscal problems brew on subterranean levels. It is to be noted, Mr. Speaker, that the regularization of non-established staff has not only been endorsed by the trade unions, but has also been recommended by the World Bank and other major financial agencies. We are hoping that by the end of this financial year, this exercise will have been completed and that those persons who fall within that category will share the full benefits of being public service employees. Parity, equity, and equality must in this context be given sublime, pragmatic, and functional expression. Three, Mr. Speaker, enactment of the Public Service Act and regulations. The Public Service Reform Unit has been engaged in discussions with the subcommittee of permanent secretaries and heads of department, together with the Public Service Commission and the CSA, towards the review of the draft Public Service Act and regulations. Historically, Mr. Speaker, the colonial rules and regulations of 1951 provided direction and guidance on issues such as terms and conditions of work, discipline, retirement, and so forth. Subsequent thereto, Mr. Speaker, the existing staff orders came into existence, and with regard to which the passage of the years has disclosed inadequacies in law, substance, and procedure. It is now felt at this time, Mr. Speaker, that the new Public Service Act and regulations will provide the requisite force of law, as well as provide for structure, discipline, uniformity, and consistency within the public service. This new act, Mr. Speaker, is expected to categorically delineate the terms and conditions of employment, conduct, leave in its various forms, discipline, retirement, etc. for public officers. Recommendations of the committee, Mr. Speaker, have been passed on to the Attorney General Chambers for its transmutation into legislative form. It is expected, Mr. Speaker, that the emerging bill will be before this Honourable House during this financial year. For implementation of customer service improvement program. Mr. Speaker, cognizance of the importance of quality service to our many clients and embracing the perception that the public service must not only work, but must work for the people, we have over the year established a committee to explore avenues and approaches that would augment and enhance customer service. This initiative, besides being driven by our own philosophical posture, is further being driven by the imperatives of the Cricket World Cup 2007. In this regard, Mr. Speaker, and from the very onset, we are targeting immigration, the police and customs departments. In addition, public officers, Mr. Speaker, who are in the vanguard of customer interface, such as office attendants, drivers, receptionists, security personnel and so forth, will be exposed to customer service training and the techniques. The process has already commenced with the training of the security personnel at the Graham Luizzi building, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in addition to the skills enhancement of officers, it is an improvement to the reception areas of government departments to ensure that our people, customers, are in a comfortable environment while they await or access the services to be provided. Our customer service improvement program will also include disaster protocols for all government offices, Mr. Speaker. Revision of policies and procedures. The implementation plan of the Public Service Reform Unit proposed the establishment of subcommittees of the public service to review and make recommendations in five critical areas: legislation, structure and functions, operative systems, human resource management, and policies and procedures. We are pleased to report that two such committees have completed their work, that is legislation, regulations, and operating systems. And this has resulted in the redrafting of the Public Service Act and regulations and the commencement of e-government initiative. Mr. Speaker, in this financial year, this unit expects to review and collate policies and procedures developed for the public service. The first phase of this exercise will cover the cross-cutting of general policies emanating from cabinet decisions and circulars. This exercise, Mr. Speaker, is of paramount importance since it will ensure that existing policies are still relevant and that there are no ambiguities and conflicts in the amendments to policies and positions. This exercise, Mr. Speaker, would also help to reduce our reliance on institutional memory, which very often deviate from established policy with the turnover of public officers. The second phase, Mr. Speaker, of this exercise is expected to be executed by individual ministries with assistance from this unit, and it entails the review of policies and procedures which relate to particular ministries and departments. Such an initiative, Mr. Speaker, as we see it, will provide the tools that are necessary for public officers to perform their duties with little uncertainty and reservation, and in consequence thereof, Mr. Speaker, ensuring equity, impartiality to our internal and external clientele, as well as ensuring consistency across the board and over time. Mr. Speaker, at this juncture, we shall now move on to the last sector in our ministry, the Ministry of Labor Relations, the Public Service, and Cooperatives. So the focus is now on cooperatives. This department, Mr. Speaker, continues to provide a facilitating and regulatory environment for the protection and growth of cooperatives in this country. It further provides technical and other forms of institutional support to this sector. It maintains a program of supervision, monitoring, and inspection of both the financial and the non-financial cooperatives. It maintains a program of rationalization of the sector through mergers, amalgamations, and e-registration. And presently, Mr. Speaker, it is involved in the formation of a national taxi cooperative. Mr. Speaker, over the years, the cooperative movement has been impacting most positively on the socio-economic fabric of this country, particularly in the rural areas. As of December 2003, there were 33 cooperative societies, 16 are financial cooperatives or credit unions, 8 fishermen cooperatives, 4 agricultural, 3 transport, and 2 arts and crafts. The total membership of the movement presently is approximately 35,000 persons, and this represents a 13.94% increase over the previous year. Mr. Speaker, it is to be noted that there are 53 school thrift societies with membership in excess of 8,500 students and with savings of over $875,000. Mr. Speaker, as we see it, from and in the schools, our youth must be taught the value of thrift, and this is important to combat the rampant consumerism and conspicuous consumption that seem to characterize our youthful society. The credit union sector, Mr. Speaker, has maintained a steady growth pattern over the years, and this in some measure can be attributed to the sustained and growing awareness on the part of the public of the intrinsic value and benefit of cooperative membership. As the credit unions continue to face a growing demand for mortgages and business loans, they have been forced to diversify their investment portfolio by introducing new financial products so as to mobilize additional funds for on lending to their membership. The growth of the credit union, Mr. Speaker, can be evidenced by the following statistics. In 2003, capital amounted to 23.2 million. In 2005, it was 25.5 million. In 2003, total assets amounted to 194 million. In 2004-2005, it amounted to 209.2 million. In 2003, total loans amounted to 140 million. In 2004-05, total loans amounted to 145.2 million. In 2003, deposits amounted to 11.4 million. In 2004-05, the deposits amounted to 22.9 million. Total membership in 2003 was 43,401 members. Total membership in 2004-05 was 48,304. An extraordinary pattern of growth for an indigenous institution whose roots are embedded in the working lives of the ordinary citizen. Mr. Speaker, at present, the 5 leading credit unions are in descending order of importance and success are 1, the St. Lucia Civil Service Cooperative Union, the Lavery Cooperative Credit Union, the St. Lucia Teachers Cooperative Credit Union, the Royal St. Lucia Police and Allied Credit Union, and the Suzelle Cooperative Credit Union. Mr. Speaker, holistically speaking, the major achievements of this subsector in recent times have been its full computerization using the software package called QMIS, standardized financial accounting using the PIRLS monitoring tool, the introduction of new inspection manual, the introduction of a new insurance product from Cooler Caribbean Insurance, which now provides funeral indemnity plans, a staff medical plan, and the payment protection plan, 6, the development of strategic plans for some societies, reduction of interest rates on mortgages, student loans and vehicle loans, special interest rates on fixed deposits for members, increase in physical assets, implementation of better security system, rigorous delinquency control measures, and increased training of staff. It is to be noted, Mr. Speaker, that there has been a twinning of the junior savings school thrift cooperatives with some of the community-based credit unions. And the credit unions which are involved in this laudable project are the St. Lucia Civil Service Credit Union, the Library Cooperative Credit Union, the St. Lucia Workers Credit Union, and the Monrepo Eastern Cooperative Credit Union. Further, it is to be noted, Mr. Speaker, that the credit unions continue to dominate the cooperative sector, both in total assets and membership, and their impact on the various communities have been immeasurably, since they have been instrumental in embracing and augmenting the formation of financial and social capital in the rural areas. And this has facilitated improvements in the overall standard of living of the lower and middle class income groups in our society. Mr. Speaker, in recent times, the Board of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank endorsed the establishment of an integrated regulatory framework for all financial institutions within the ECCB. And so in the not too distant future, all credit unions will fall within the purview of the single regulatory unit. From the Department of Cooperatives, credit unions will now become the responsibility of the Ministry of Finance. Our concern with regard to this structural organizational change is that the indigenous and populist nature of credit unions might be adversely affected. The credit union ethos is the quality and democratic service it provides to its membership. These institutions should not be placed at a disadvantage compared to more sophisticated and impersonal competitors. For what must be made abundantly clear, Mr. Speaker, is that a cooperative is an autonomous association of persons who voluntarily join together to meet the economic, social, and cultural needs and aspirations through the formation of a jointly owned enterprise, contributing equitably to the capital required, accepting a fair share of the risk and benefits, and participating in its management and democratic control. In its operation, Mr. Speaker, it is characterized by the values of self-help, self-responsibility, democracy, equality, equity, and solidarity. The bottom line, Mr. Speaker, as far as credit unions are concerned, is not the profit margin. The bottom line, Mr. Speaker, is the people. It is the dynamic and focused expression of these qualities in an atmosphere of trust and reliance, Mr. Speaker, that has made credit unions worldwide a veritable success. It is a sterling example of self-propelled growth and governance. It would seem, Mr. Speaker, that this sector has become a victim of its own success. But one unanswered question that has concerned us, Mr. Speaker, is this. What will be the cost of this transformation to the membership? Mr. Speaker, we shall now deal with the non-financial cooperative societies. And they are the fishermen's cooperative, the agricultural cooperatives, the transportation taxi cooperative, and the arts and crafts cooperative. There are at present 9 fishermen cooperatives, one of which, the East Coast Cooperative in Miku, is essentially moribund or dysfunctional. The viable ones are situated in Grosvenor, Castries, Ansari, Soufre, Suzelle, Labrie, Beaufort, and Denry. The modern fishing complexes, which were built by this government, Mr. Speaker, are now fully managed by these cooperatives. Our fishermen are benefited directly by the amenities provided in these complexes. And as a result, the pescatorial activities of the membership have been augmented and enhanced. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, the fishing industry has moved to a higher level, and the fish retail market is now able to meet the high standards demanded by consumers and the health authorities. Within this subsector, Mr. Speaker, a program of rehabilitation, computerization, and systems of best practice continue. But there is still a need for innovative and aggressive membership campaign of both co-op in the fishing industry if they are to maintain their viability. Mr. Speaker, in terms of the financial status of this subsector for the year 2004, capital was approximately 3 million, savings 571,000, total assets 5 million, and membership 744, slight increases over the previous year. Of the agricultural co-ops, Mr. Speaker, only 5 are functional in varying degrees, with the Bellevue Farmers Cooperative taking the lead. It is a very viable cooperative that has forged significant commercial linkages with the tourism industry. In promoting the vegetable farming component of the agricultural sector, it has led in the formation of the St. Lucia Farmers Cooperative Association. This, Mr. Speaker, is a pilot project funded by Oxfam of Great Britain with linkages with the St. Lucia Heritage Tourism Program. The aim of the project is to improve the livelihood of small-scale farmers by developing a commercial nexus with the hotel sector within the tourism industry. Mr. Speaker, this project has two phases. The first is to encourage trade in local fresh produce between hotels and the farmers, and the second is to develop regional trade in agricultural products to meet the demands of the hotel sector generally. The other farming entities, Mr. Speaker, involved in this project are the Black Bay Farmers, the Grace Farmers, and the Bass Lahou Farmers. This is a 5-year project from which 100 small-scale farmers will benefit. Generally, the agricultural co-op are experiencing difficulty in their operation, and this in some measure can be attributed to 1, small-scale operation, 2, land availability, 3, low-level capital, 4, weak management, and 5, absence or the virtual absence of an entrepreneurial approach in the conduct of the affairs. It is a situation that needs to engage the resources of the Ministry of Agriculture. For the year 2004, total capital was $79,000, total savings $31,000, total assets approximately $396,000, and membership 127. Mr. Speaker, we shall now move on to the transport and the cooperative. The financial status of the transport cooperative for 2004, Mr. Speaker, was capital 288,000, savings 64,000, total assets 65,000, and membership 45,000. Mr. Speaker, through intensive marketing, research and promotion, these cooperatives are virtually in a position to provide quality service which meets international standards. To the tourism industry, they are delivering a better product. And this new image that is presently being projected can be attributed to 1, the formulation of a code of conduct to govern and regulate how drivers present themselves and execute their duties, the introduction of minimum operation standards for vehicles used by the cooperatives, 3, the massive increase in marketing and promotion, and 4, the concessions given by government and the waiving of certain duties on vehicles which have allowed members to improve the services of the services offered. Mr. Speaker, the last subsector in this area of cooperatives is the arts craft. It is indeed one of the promising areas in the cooperative pantheon. There is tremendous potential within that sector that needs to be explored and developed, and this can be done by establishing a commercial nexus with the tourism industry. It is an area that can provide training and employment, particularly among our female youth. To further their development, the Cassius Arts and Craft Cooperative, the Canadel Cooperative of Canneries, and the Labby Organization need to seek further assistance from CEDU, Belfund, OPSR, and other similar funding agencies. Mr. Speaker, as we see it, the future looks bright for the arts and craft, but further investment needs to be made on a multiplicity of levels. For the financial year, the Corp Department will do all in its power to assist this subsector in its development. Mr. Speaker, in concluding our presentation, we shall at this time address ourselves to the constituency of Labry, popularly known as the Lab. And we shall begin our presentation on and for the Labry constituency by alluding to our remarks made under similar circumstance in a year spent by time, the currency of our mortality and finitude. And so in classic form, Mr. Speaker, we disclose the quality of this community of beings as it comes to terms with the undulations of our unfolding destiny. Pathos and hope crucially juxtapose in its intricacies. And so to the Lab, where minds contend and bodies ascend in a cauldron of ceasing creative activity and passion, and where the dialectics of communal postures are given numinous expression, as synergies are established in a sublime thrust for community betterment and elevation. And for many a year, Mr. Speaker, now 19 to be exact, we have articulated the needs of Labry, the dreams and aspirations of its people. And for many a year, 10 to be exact, silence embraced those needs, those aspirations, in a blanket of vindictive wrath. But unbowed, uncowed, unbent, not vanquished, the Lab pillowed her loyalty and her benumbed pain on the breast of time and waited. Patience crucially juxtaposed with loyalty. And then on that fateful day of 1997, beneath the Asia skies of May, she aroused herself from a painful slumber of the years and danced into the arms of the present with unbridled expectancy. Mr. Speaker, it has been quite a dance with much stumbling and not much grace. But in 9 years, we of the Lab have managed to maintain a certain rhythm as the cadence of development rose and fell beyond our expectations. But the melody of our loyalty has kept us going through the grace of achievement, though the grace of achievement has yet to attain its optimal expression. And this creates a discordant note in the melody of our song, that Labry is labor forever. Mr. Speaker, in a rather abstruse manner, this witticism comes to mind. Distance makes the heart grow fonder, but for a while. Between 1997 to 2006, there is much we have accomplished. But having said this, there's much more we wish we could have done. If we could have paved the streets of Lahore in gold, we would have done so. If at this time we could have paved the Peterborough Lane in silver, we would have done so. And if we could have built a Taj Mahal as the Human Resource Development Center for Oji, we would have done so. But then there are limitations in the various forms and modes and simulations. And speaking of Peterborough, Mr. Speaker, here is a missive. Here is a missive dated the 10th of October 2005 from the Minister of Communications to his Permanent Secretary. It reads, Mr. Speaker, and I quote, subject, Peterborough Road, Lahore Village, dated the 10th of October 2005, find attached a letter of concern from the Honourable Vernon John, Parliamentary Representative for Lahore, complaining about the deplorable condition of the Peterborough Road, Lahore. Grateful if the technical staff could undertake an assessment with a possible view of effecting remedial action. Mr. Speaker, we have been given the assurance that this roadway will be refurbished in 2006. As we have already intimated, Mr. Speaker, not all her needs, the needs of Lahore, of this constituency, of the Lahore, not all of the needs have been met. Not all of her dreams have been realized. Her aspirations are there in poignant expectancy, surrounded by flowers of hope and the goodwill of men other than ourselves. In the unfolding of that period, Mr. Speaker, we saw the sunrise of another time, and yet the curtain that needs to be drawn across the threshold of our commitment, our promises, and our hopes was being held back by forces beyond our control. And so perplexed but undoubted, we shouted through prose and verse our unbewildered needs at the various agencies of action. Perhaps we were too selfish, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps we were too greedy. Perhaps we were too blind to note those limitations that hung like an albatross across our collective necks. The euphoria, Mr. Speaker, of change can blind us with its promises and possibilities, and have good men lose their reason when we are all reasonable men. What is it in our altruistic cupidity, Mr. Speaker, a contradiction in terms but applicable? So what is it in our altruistic cupidity and naivety that we sought so fervently and for so long? To give you an idea, Mr. Speaker, we shall allude to a missive dated the 16th of February 2004 from the Basic Needs Trust Funds. And it reads, Mr. Speaker, Honourable Vernon John, Parliamentary Representative for Lahore. Yes, sir. Lahore Plan of Action revised for the period 2002-2006. We acknowledge receipt of your action plan. We attach our proposed sub-projects that may match our criteria for selection. We suggest a tour of the noted proposed sub-project sites in order to confirm our involvement and consideration for inclusion in our 2005-2006 work plan. Based on previous discussions, the construction of an arts and crafts center at the Rudy John Beach Park was set for implementation in 2004-2005. Please note that this sub-project was deferred due to the status of the planning stage. We suggest a meeting of stakeholders to continue action on the same. Discussions with Mr. Lucius Illivic was held recently in this regard. Please advise us further on the foregoing, yours faithfully. And the attack proposal goes like this, Mr. Speaker. One, construction of an arts and crafts center at the Rudy John Beach Park. Two, construction of the Lahore Bridge. Three, construction of the Lahore Village Wall. 4. Refurbishment of the Shime Farm Road in Oji. 5. Construction of the Pitibub Road in the village of Labri. 6. Refurbishment of the Derba Oji Ring Road. 7. The refurbishment of the Mon Libla Road. 8. Refurbishment of the Mon Ver Road. 9. Refurbishment of the Lama Monrifo Road in the village of Labri. 10. Refurbishment of the Mon Kabut Road. 11. Refurbishment of the Olibo Minor Road in La Grasse. 12. Refurbishment of the Mon Paul Road. 13. Refurbishment of the Beranger Hunt Cul-de-Sac. 14. Refurbishment of the Maganier Road in Oji. 15. Refurbishment of public toilets in Labri Village. 16. Extension of water service to Mon Paul. 17. Extension of water service along the Mon Libla Road to the Lookout Point. 18. Construction of footpaths of Eucalyptus Road in the village of Labri. 19. Construction of footpaths of Mon Libla Road opposite the home of Aaron Luisi. 20. Construction of footpaths opposite Bueller's restaurant in the village of Labri. 21. Construction of footpaths on the eastern side of the bypass. 22. Construction of the footpath at the junction of Louis and St. Isidore Hill. 23. Construction of footpaths in the bypass Monrifo area. 24. Refurbishment of the Galba Minor Road in Lahore. 25. Refurbishment of the Valley Road in Vance. 26. Construction of the Crossover Park Testenier Road. And 27. Construction of the bridge across the Labri River, which would then further the extension of the Alan Luisi Street. Proposals to be considered. Action plan for the period 2001 to 2006. Incidentally, Mr. Speaker, these proposals, and there were others, were sent to all relevant agencies and personalities. And so, Mr. Speaker, once again, and in terms of blocks, stone, concrete, etc., we shall go through the pilgrimage of the cross, and hopefully, and this time around, there will be a more positive, affirmative, and concrete response commensurate with this extraordinary epiphany of loyalty that the lab has displayed for the past 40 years. What has been achieved in Labri, Mr. Speaker, through dint of hard work, perseverance, tenacity, is no longer our concern. The achievement of the past rests with the people and their sense of my historic passage in their midst. What concerns us is what needs to be done before this electoral term evidences its denouement, and with it our parliamentary and political demise. Mr. Speaker, much has been achieved in our time, but much more could have been achieved in that time. 1987 to 1992, when we were in the wilderness. 1992 to 1997, when we were in opposition. And from 1997 to the present, when we were and are in government. A rather interesting period in our life. Strangely enough, Mr. Speaker, if we want to pose the question as to whether we have justified our political existence, and that is politics writ large, our answer would be no. Perhaps it is because for us, politics has always had an instrumental rather than a terminal value. Mr. Speaker, we shall at this time allude to our plan of action 2001-2006 and comment where necessary on certain projects. The Labri Administrative Center, that is in construction. This structure will indeed change for the better the agricultural landscape of the village. It will be a 1.2 million plus for Labri. 2. The Labri Beach Promenade is still on the drawing board. Hopefully the next administration will incorporate this dream, this intention, in the beautification plans for the Labri waterfront. 3. The Art and Craft Center at the Rudy John Beach Park alluded to earlier is presently being addressed by the BNC. Hopefully we should see the commencement of construction in 2006. Four, the Human Resource Development Center and the multipurpose court for Oji are actively being considered for construction in this financial year. Two parcels of land with the intervention of NDC have been targeted for their construction. By Cricket World Cup 2007, we are hoping that at least one, if not both, of these projects will have been completed. Five, the construction of a playing field in La Grasse is underway and should be completed sometime this year. With its construction, the next phase will be the erection of a community center and later down the road, a multi-purpose court. Six, allocation for the construction of the Larivière-Tibois Bridge has been made in this year's estimate. The tendering process is ongoing, and sometime this year, construction will begin. That is the assurance that has been given to us. Seven, the extension of water and electricity along the Mont-Leblanc Road has in part been accomplished. There is electricity, but no water. The endemic and perennial problems of Wasco is a hurdle that must be circumvented since the area is presently being developed for residential purposes. Eight, the construction of the community center at Majumel and the construction of the youth center in the village of Labri are matters for the next administration to address. Nine, the refurbishment of roads have been problematic. Many roads have been repaired over the years, but they revert to their condition of disrepair within a 6-9 month period. The problem as we see it is the quality of work. As a government, we are not getting value for money. Road project managers need to be appointed and penalty clauses should be inserted in all road contracts. At this point in time, there are roads that are in need of repair. And though we have been given the assurance that some of those roads will be addressed this year, yet as a matter of general interest, we shall name them all. Basse-Châtelet-Gélit Road, La Grasse-La-Haut-Bévanché Ring Road, the Mont-Vert Road, the western side of the Mont-Leblanc Road, the Mont-Repos-Lamar Road, the Derbois-Auger Ring Road, and the Father Brochard-Labatry Road, and the Petit-Bougue Road in the village of Labry. Mr. Speaker, there are other areas of concern, for example, like the Labry River Wall and the construction of the 12 picnic tables for the Rudy John Beach Park. And they have formed our list for Labry. But these, it seems, will be transposed to the list of needs of Mr. Albert Baptiste, the next and succeeding parliamentary representative for Labry. Mr. Speaker, with regard to the projects we have alluded to, we will not be working in isolation as far as their materialization is concerned. We work with the Labry Village, with the Labry Village Council and the Labry Development Foundation. Their goal, their objective is primarily developmental, whereas ours is both developmental and political. However, in the final analysis, there is a functional congruence and synergy that redound to the benefit of the community. Despite the hybrid nature of our association, we of the lab are one. And this, in a rather abstruse manner, our collective successes will further reinforce the perception and the reality that Labry is indeed labor forever. In a little while, Mr. Speaker, we shall be having general elections, and contemporaneous therewith will be the reality of our departure from the politics of this country. But regardless of the timing of that time, the work for Labry and its people shall assiduously be addressed. And in the process of so doing, the beacon of loyalty shall be held aloft to guide and to lead the sons and daughters of labor. That has been the historic posture of the LAB. In the constellation of the stars, Mr. Speaker, it deservingly stands alone in its humble magnificence. At this time, Mr. Speaker, from this Honorable House, I would like to express our thanks and appreciation to our people of the Lava for their jovial patience, undying loyalty, and enthusiastic assistance in the discharge of our responsibilities as district rep. This has been a labor of love and has reinforced the ties of belonging to the place where I was born. My thanks and appreciation, gratitude further extends to all those who were instrumental in providing me with the opportunity to be of service to my home constituency. It was indeed a privilege and an honor, and in this regard, I am eternally grateful. At this time, Mr. Speaker, we further would like to express our thanks and appreciation to the staff of the Ministry of Labor Relations, the Public Service and Cooperatives, and also to the staff of the then Ministry of Home Affairs, Legal Affairs and Labor. We have had some trying, challenging times, but in the main, a certain stability was maintained, a certain productive thrust was initiated for the greater part. Hardly anyone remembers the conflagration at Her Majesty's Royal Jail and the housing of inmates at the OTSA facility. Nightmarish times, at a time when we were at ground zero in the reform of the police institution, the prison, the fire service, and the criminal justice system. We floundered for a while, but we did not sink. We were buffeted by unwarranted criticism, but we did not fall on our face. We never have. Strategic plans have been put into place, and certain administrative and organizational changes have been implemented for the better of the service and its agencies. Mr. Speaker, at this time, we must further make the admission that in spite of certain institutional limitations, the staff of the public service for the greater part are indeed worthy of our commendation. Within tight time schedules, they can and have come up with creative responses to unexpected challenges and are in a perpetual mode of engagement to meet the exigencies of their mission of service. We salute them. And so, Mr. Speaker, in the twilight of our political life, we have seen much, from the ridiculous to the sublime, from the inane to the sagacious. In all of this, Mr. Speaker, we have been able to discern a residual humanity that in the final analysis will enable us and those thereafter to resolve the problems of our time and theirs. With this submission, Mr. Speaker, we unequivocally support the Appropriation Bill 2006-2007, which as we see it, reflects the balanced thrust of government in the development of this country. This government did not only augment and enhance the physical structure, infrastructure of this country, such as the building of schools, police stations, fire stations, bridges, health centers, hospitals, roads, HRDC, footpaths, jetties, fisheries complex, playing fields, and the creation of residential space with absolute and provisional ownership. But through and beyond those elements of development, we also created the environment where our human and social capital are equally augmented and enhanced. There is not one area of development that we have ignored. All sectors, by the exertions of this government, by the vision of this government, have been impacted upon most positively. And this is why St. Lucia stands tall and is the tallest in the OECS region. That is an indisputable fact. Mr. Speaker, our regional stature attained in just 9 years. If we had 30 years, Mr. Speaker, St. Lucia would be a veritable paradise. In spite of our indigenous limitations, in spite of our regional constraints, in spite of the strictures of globalization and trade liberalization. Mr. Speaker, In that short period of time, we have achieved much, but there is much more to be done. But what must explicitly be understood is that in that scenario of development, the government, and that goes for any government, cannot do it alone. In this process of development, a government has a dual role, executor and facilitator. And so the other sectors must come on board, civil society, and the NGOs have a vital role to play. And the people in their individual and collectivity must conform themselves to an ethos of development that has as its raison d'etre the eradication of poverty and the glorification of an edifying humanity. This appropriation bill, Mr. Speaker, is but another platform to launch us to the stars. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That ends my contribution.